Blog Talk Radio.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repair. Wandering in my desert, your oasis appears. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me I need to know.
Mark Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to another show. As you know, we do the Men's Spiritual Hour every month, generally on the third Wednesday. The third Tuesday of every month. We did have a little bit of a time shift last month because we were kind of adjusting for some other stuff that was going on, but we're back on schedule again. As always, we like to tell everybody if you want to find out more about this show or any of the other shows that we have on Spiritual Connections Radio, you can go to the website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. As always, you know, with this show here, it was funny because I was actually talking to my co-host Mike and our guest who's coming on tonight about the formation of the show and why we started it. And we created the Men's Spiritual Hour because we wanted to create a show where we brought in male guests, authors, speakers, you know, gurus from around the world to talk about their spiritual journey because, you know, from our aspect, and I'll just say, Mike, hello, you out there?
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, so, you know, with me and Mike, we had decided that it'd be really great if we created a show that, you know, kind of really supported the men out there. I know for a lot of us who have been on our spiritual journeys for a while now, you know, it's not unusual to be the only man in the room and amongst hundreds of other women and feeling like a very big minority. And, you know, because of that, we really felt it'd be really great that we created a radio show that specifically brought in and talked about men and their journeys and stuff like that. So that's why we created the show. And it's been incredible with all the great people we've had on. So with that, I'm actually going to turn this over to Mike, and I'll let him introduce the great guests that we have for this evening.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. All right. Good evening, everybody. Tonight we have Dr. Henry Grayson. Dr. Grayson is on the cutting edge of mind, body, and spirit psychology. He received his PhD in psychology from Boston University, and he studied neuropsychology, the major psychotherapies, the new power therapies, quantum physics, and Eastern and Western spiritual philosophies. There's also a book that he's written and some other PBS specials he's done. So that all sounds very, very interesting. So, Dr. Grayson, are you there?
I'm here. Good to be with you.
Oh, it's great to be here tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say it's great to have you on. For people who normally listen to Spiritual Connections Radio, we actually had the doctor on, I think it was about a month or two ago, where he was on the Thursday night show talking about a lot of the work that he's doing right now. And for people who listen to that show, we're actually going to go in a different direction this evening. Of course, as the theme of the show goes, we're going to be digging into finding out about what the doctor, I think I'm just going to call you Henry.
That's fine.
what Henry's journey's been like. And also, you know, kind of going back to, and, you know, as always, people who listen to the show know that I love to tell little stories. So I'll tell you that my first introduction to Henry was his book. And I want to make sure I get the title right. It was called Mindful Loving.
Yes, that's
correct?
The title.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good, good. I feel really good. That's why I screwed that up. So, you know, in doing this in a little bit of a backward way, why don't you just start by talking about that book? I know it's not, you know, one of the primary things you work on, I know, is probably something that feels like a whole different lifetime for you as far as the work you did. But why don't we go ahead and talk about that? What is that book, and, you know, what led you to create it? And what do you think is the biggest, you know, feedback that you've gotten from, you know, all the comments and everything out there from the people like myself who've read it, and it's actually changed the way our relationships work?
Well, I think that through my years of practice, I was frequently working with couples and about their relationship, and I was working with individuals who would work on their relationships, whether with their intimate relationship or whether their work relationships or other family relationships. And so I would begin to see issues that were quite common for everybody there, and issues that were not really often thought about or dealt with. And I think one of the earlier things was that I had begun to observe that in couple relationships, there seemed to be a connection between a lot of the thoughts that people were having about their spouses and what would happen in that interaction. And I began to see the same thing happen about business relationships. And so I decided I was going to do a little experiment one day. Lived in New York City at the time. And I thought, I'm going to do a secret experiment, and I'll tell my wife about it after, because I know she'll get a charge out of it and it wouldn't offend her. And so I decided that for every other day for 2 weeks, I would on one day think of all of my appreciative thoughts for her, my thoughts of gratitude, my thoughts of love, my thoughts of tenderness, and so on. And any other thoughts that were negative, I would just let them go. But I would just focus on those. On the alternate days, I would do the opposite. I would think about any past grievances, any past hurts, things I did not like about her, criticisms I had, judgments I had, and I would let go of all the positive ones and just focus on those negative ones. And I wanted to see how that would affect our relationship, and you know, more immediately or gradually. The results of that actually blew my mind. What I found is I get home, and in New York, you know, you have these double locks on the doors, the bolt locks as well as the other, so you can hear it clicking throughout an apartment. So I'd get home, and that lock would click. And on the days I'd been thinking my compassionate and loving and appreciative thoughts about her, she'd be bounding to the door to give me a hug and a kiss, maybe a cold drink in hand, take me by hand over to sit down on the couch and share things of the day together. On the days that I was thinking my negative thoughts, she'd be nowhere near the door. I would open, come in, I'd call to her, I'd hear a grumpy response at the other side of the apartment. I'd come around to make contact with her, to give her a hug. It would be a more perfunctory hug that came from her. We'd be talking, and within 5 minutes, we'd be having a little spat or a disagreement about something. That went back and forth for those 2 whole weeks. And I could not believe how dramatically different it was each day, depending on which thoughts I was thinking about her. And then, of course, at the end, I told her what it was, and she had a great big laugh and a sigh of relief. She says, "Oh, my God, what a relief. I didn't know what was happening to our relationship." And she had a big laugh about it, too. But what we were both glad to see is that there was something to this whole thing about what we think. Because, as the Buddha said, you are what you think. With your thoughts, you make your world. Or, as a man, in the Christian and Jewish tradition, it was, a man thinks in his heart, so he is. And even now we get into psychology and we find that cognitive therapy is one of the foremost therapies we have around. All of these are saying that what we think is really important, whether it's from a spiritual tradition, whether it's from a psychological tradition, that what we think is having a profound effect. And what that says to me from a spiritual perspective is that if we look back to the creation myth in the book of Genesis in the Bible, it portrays God, you know, in a certain way. It says, and God said, let there be light, let there be firmament, let there be this, let there be that. And when he got to the place about creating man, it said, and then God created man in his own image and likeness. Interesting concept in that myth, because if we think about that, we're not really different from what people call God. And here he's portrayed as creator, and creator with thoughts, which is, wasn't often taught to me in my spiritual teachings as I grew up as a kid, that we are created as creators too, and with our thoughts. Mm-hmm. And instead of our being seeing ourselves as created in the image and likeness of God, we human beings through the century have mostly done the opposite. We've created God in our image and projected that image out into the sky for a sky God who judges and who condemns and who blames or who sometimes rewards. And that's just a projection of the human ego. It has nothing to do with God. And so we've really done ourselves a disservice through a lot of this, our Christian teachings that got distorted and took us away from the true spirituality that I think we're so capable of. And it's that part, that true part of our spirituality, where we see ourselves as creators and how we are stronger creators than when we identify with love, which is a spiritual element and the strongest force in the universe. And when we do that, what an amazing impact it has on our relationships.
You know, it's funny. I was actually having a discussion with a friend the other day. We were talking about the water studies and the vibrational differences between love, hate, and gratitude. And the argument was, as my friend had said, well, gratitude actually has a higher frequency than love. But it's my understanding that love is actually the highest frequency there is.
Well, there's a wonderful line in one cycle spiritual work called A Course in Miracles. It says, where there is gratitude, love cannot be far behind. And I think that's a wonderful way of putting it, too. They're so tied in together that one breeds the other.
Yeah.
I think focus on their criticisms of each other. Boy, it takes them away from love totally.
Yeah, and that's actually what I was going to lead it to, because, you know, with the fact that we have you on, of course, we want to hear about you and your spiritual journey, but at the same time, let's use you as the relationship expert you are. You know, what does a man do in a situation, you know, either married or in a relationship, where it seems like he's in a position that he's being accused of something, he has no idea what he's being accused of it, and it doesn't seem like there's anything he can do wrong. I mean, Do you, I guess, based on your teachings, do you basically just look at that situation and the best energy, the light of what you want to see happen to be able to change that whole experience around?
Well, I think there are two or three things, because one, if I'm seeing something a certain way, we know that doesn't necessarily mean it's an objective reality. We all see through our own colored eyeglasses. A wonderful spiritual teacher of the late 1700s, a Hasidic master, Rebbe Nachman of Breslov, said, we don't see things as they are. We see them as we are. So our perceptions are always projections of our insides. I know my son and I, my one grown son and I, were having this discussion the other day about how we are all just projecting. And he talks about how, he says, I just don't take things personally anymore, he said. And here he is only 23 years old. And I thought, boy, I wish I'd known that when I was 23. And I said, why is that? He said, I just know that people are just talking about themselves. And whatever they're coming at me with criticisms, it's probably criticisms that they level toward themselves too. And they're just projecting it out onto me. And I thought, wow, I wish I'd gotten that when I was that age myself. Took me quite a while to get to that understanding.
So if we're looking at it from the aspect of being in a relationship and seeing, and it doesn't matter what type of partnership it is,
right.
When we see that, we're being hit with all this energy or all this anger or whatever it is, I think it's also from the four agreements that we can say that pretty much, you know, 99% of everything that goes on has nothing to do with us. But it's funny
right. How
quickly we are to kind of step up and take ownership for stuff, you know, especially
when
we're in a relationship with somebody we care about.
Well, and also, when we feel criticized, we often feel hurt and defensive.
Mm-hmm.
And once we do that, then, of course, the communication breaks down. But if I can recognize that, basically, there are just two emotions in the world, love and fear, and that all of the negative ones come out of fear, anger, jealousy, rage, hatred, resentment, and so on, hurt, all that comes out of fear. And all of the positive ones come out of love. So in a moment of interaction, it makes it much more simple for me, because if the other person is not being loving right now, and it's pretty obvious when they're not, there's only one other option. They're coming out of fear. And it's probably something in their history that's all triggered there, because we all see through eyes of the past. That colors everything that we see. And when that happens, we react as though the past thing is happening again. Mm-hmm. So if I can just see that that's what's happening with this person, whether it's a business partner or a boss or an employee or a romantic partner or a spouse or a child or a parent, if there's this emotional charge that's coming out of fear. And we can also see, there's a wonderful old saying, if it's hysterical, it's historical, which is another way of saying, if I have a strong emotional charge, or this other person has a strong emotional charge on something, chances are it's just a reactivation of some old, deep hurt or pain from the past, often from childhood. And if I can see that, then I'm more likely to be able to have loving compassion for that person. They're just in fear now. I don't know where this really comes from. I don't know what it's about. But I know for that charge on it, it has to be some deep hurt or pain from somewhere. Let me just have a healing thought of love and compassion that their fear will heal. And let me listen with love and compassion so that can bring some healing as well. When I do that, I cease feeling like a victim. I'm literally taking my power back. We have the false idea of what masculinity is in our culture and where power lies. We think if we get defensive and attack and defend ourselves, that's being strong. No, it's coming out of weakness. It's exactly the opposite. If I were to have a person extend their arms and resist the arm, me pushing it down as much as they can, and they're focusing on a thought of resentment or defensiveness or trying to defend an attack or rejection, but they're getting defensive about it, I say, focus on that defensiveness and resist me pushing your arm down as much as you can. No matter how strong they resist, I can push it down with a little finger. It goes so weak. It blows people's minds, especially a strong man who works out 3 to 4 times a week. On the other hand, if he's able to shift to a thought of compassion and understanding and healing love that he's had toward anybody, anytime, and just focus on that in his mind, have him extend his arm and resist me pushing it down, it becomes so strong I can't push it down with 2 hands. I could pretty much swing from it like a monkey. That tells us this whole idea of spirituality and love is not a namby-pamby kind of thing. It is the source of our greatest power. And we have it totally upside down so much in the world. And our culture promotes that in terms of false images of masculinity.
Yeah, I agree with you. I forget what his name is, but David, I call him David. I think one of the things that David talks about is, you know, he talks about when you're in those situations, really just being conscious and staying present and, you know, not being influenced in any way to react to those situations, because we're so quick to be defensive or to counterattack or to try to make the other person wrong. So that
somebody's got to be right and somebody wrong. And they're trying to make me wrong, I have to defend. That's the old way.
I know I kind of cut you off a little bit before, but you were saying that there was 3 different ways of looking at 3 different things to know. Did we cover those?
Yeah, I think one is to use that distinction of love versus fear. The other person's coming out of fear. The second thing is to see that it comes from something historical if it's a strong reaction. That means there's an old trauma, there's an old rejection, there's an old hurt somewhere that's not been healed. And if we can see that, then it's easier for us to move towards step 3, which is to consciously extend loving thought and compassion for healing, which means then I'm identified with love and my arm, my whole being becomes stronger, but also I'm beginning to extend that out there to the other person, which can help bring healing as well.
So, Mike, do you have any questions?
I just like to say that I agree. I go through so many situations in life where it is about, unfortunately, with trying to fan the male ego all the time, and it's just very refreshing to hear the truth, that it's not that a man has to succumb to his total feminine side, but that the actual truth is to be loving and compassionate. And there's just so many situations
of power.
Yeah, and there's so many situations, you know, that we all come across in life that don't have to be such heated debate. They don't have to be fired up. If people would just listen to what the other person has to say, and and not have such a reaction. But it's just amazing, you know, even as I think going back to childhood, you know, the things that trigger you, even if you get to a point in the day where you're having a wonderful day and you're feeling loving and compassion, and then something triggers you, and it might not be a problem you have in your life now, but just hearing about it or seeing it triggers you like it is still happening because it happened in your childhood. And it's amazing how much of our adult lives we go through still healing from our childhood.
Yeah, the whole idea of these things from our past, you know, it's really quite amazing, because when I used to do a radio show myself, there was a neuroscientist on it that said, you know, this old saying, once bitten, twice shy, he said, is a gross understatement. He said, it's really, he says, that part of our brain, our old reptilian brain, our limbic system, our survival brain, is actually 15 to 18 times more active than it needs to be for our stage of evolution. That means we need to use a lot of tools to help counter that overactivity of that part of our brain. Because what happens, anything that resembles that old pain will push the button, set off the alarm system going, and before you know it, we're losing it. And we don't know where it comes from. I mean, everybody's had the experience of sitting in a restaurant, might be with your spouse, it might be with a coworker, might be with another family member, having a pleasant conversation, and somebody says something totally innocuous, and the other person just goes off the wall. We've either been in that situation or we've been the recipient of it. We've all known that somewhere. And what that tells us is that that old stuff just so easily gets the button pushed and is reactivated. Fortunately, now there are very wonderful, easy-to-use tools that we can use to clear those kind of things out. Things like the EFT or the EMDR, tappings on opposite shoulders, or methods like that that one can use on oneself as well as with others. And I like to, with couples, for example, I like to teach them to use these tools so that when one overreacts, one can catch it and say, honey, I realize I'm overreacting. I'm reacting like I did to my mom or my dad when they said such and such. Would you guide me through one of these clearings so I can release it? Wow.
You know,
when they can do that, it moves toward adjoining and loving and support rather than a battle.
Yeah, I think probably one of the biggest lessons I've been learning as I've been going on the spiritual journey is that lots of times, and it's not that it comes easy. I mean, it definitely takes some work.
Yes.
Is that it takes some effort to identify what exactly is going on. You know, for a long time,
right.
I was in these relationships, and I couldn't quite understand why I was giving up my power, why I wasn't going into conflict. And, you know, after, you know, whatever it is, 40 years, I finally figured out, oh, you know, it has to do with the relationship I had with my mother and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is common with a lot of people, but I think one of the things that I really notice is that, you know, and I'm not saying it's easy to figure out what's going on, but lots of times we can figure out what's going on. Lots of times the problem I have is there doesn't seem to be a lot of solutions on how you could fix it. So if you say, for example, you know, I'm uncovering on my spiritual journey that I have a problem with abandonment. You know, it's like, well, how do you fix that? You know, or if I have a conflict where, or if I have a problem where I don't know how to nurture or love myself, so I'm looking outside myself for everything. You know, no one really writes any books out there that says this is how you nurture yourself. So I think that's like a common theme I've seen in spirituality is that, you know, there's a lot of modalities out there. I mean, everybody's got, you know, a solution for different things and stuff like that. But generally, I think in a lot of situations, you can get to the point that you figured out exactly what it is that's going on with you, but you're not quite sure what tool it is you go and pick up to actually fix it. So,
well,
have you had that experience yourself?
Oh, yes. And they're tools I love to use and teach people to use to deal with that. One very simple one, if I don't really know what something is and where it's from, but just when I'm aware of having this reaction, I'm feeling hurt or I'm feeling sad or I'm feeling a loss or I'm feeling, or I'm feeling scared, it's just to bring your right hand up over the upper chest, place it up over the heart, flat on the chest, let it go around in this clockwise fashion, looking off on the outside. Very soothing gesture on the chest and the heart. It stimulates the thymus gland as well, which makes more T cells, stimulates the heart energy. And then just to say to myself, I deeply love and accept myself, even though I'm feeling so offended right now. Or I deeply love and accept myself, even though I'm feeling so rejected right now. Or I deeply love and accept myself, even though I'm feeling scared right now. It helps us embrace our more vulnerable emotion and bring love, the powerful force of healing, to it. And just by doing that 3 times or 12 times, it helps bring more soothing. Our culture doesn't provide many opportunities for self-soothing and self-nurturance. Most of the things used in our culture create more harm. We get addicted to drugs, to alcohol, to work, to computer, to iPhones, you name it, to television. And we'll go to those to try to take care of ourselves, rather than something that's genuinely soothing and helpful. But this simple little, what I call the thymus heart rub, is just such a wonderful tool for me to bring healing love to whatever that disturbance is. Then after I've done that, maybe I can reflect further as to where it might come from. But at least that one helps me as a first aid measure immediately at that moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to be caring.
Now, I know you have a lot of tools in your toolbox. What do you find in your experience so far in life has been probably the most useful tool?
Wow. It's hard to say because so many of them I use, and I find them all useful in different ways.
Well, certainly, how about you name the top three?
The top three would probably be, the first aid would be this little thymus rub. The other two that would be that would be regular practice of meditation. And another one would be a practice of meridian stimulation. That is where you touch or tap on some acupressure points with intention to release.
Wow. And those, I think that's a lot of the stuff you teach.
Yeah, it is. Those are the three I find most helpful. I know if I know that only 5% of the people that go and study meditation will actually keep practicing it, mm-hmm. which is really quite sad because it's a wonderful tool we can use that strengthens us.
Now, do you think that's because people are trying to put their the square peg into the round hole? I think everybody's trying to do the same meditation. It really is about finding the meditation that works for you.
I think that can be one factor, but I think there's a much bigger factor. I think because if you look at it, not just meditation, but there was a recent study that came out of Yale where, in their new alternative division of their medical school, they did a survey and found that only 5% of Americans will do what they know to do to stay healthy. The American Heart Association, you know, says only 10% of Americans will do what they know to do to keep a healthy heart. What that says across the board, whether it's for our physical health or whether it's my emotional health or my spiritual health, that we have blocks against using these tools. And what I found in my national surveys around the country, all over the United States, that most people think they deserve and it's safe and they're worthy of doing these practices. But if you look at it underneath and get to the unconscious mind about it, virtually everyone doesn't believe they're deserving or it's safe or they're worthy of taking good care of themselves or giving themselves the gift of meditation or to take care of themselves, you know, getting good enough sleep, whatever it might be, or to do other spiritual practices.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be part of a human condition to resist that.
Yeah.
And it's the part that we all have to deal with and realize we have barriers to using all these tools. So I think the real problem in the world, we've got hundreds and now thousands of self-help books that give us all the information about what to do and how to do it. But what we're seeing more regularly, we don't need more information about what to do. We've got it all out there. We've got to get rid of our blocks to using it. That's the biggest barrier we have now.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of understand that on my own journey because one of the things I keep on coming back to over and over again is that there seems to be something underlying myself where it's like I'm afraid to, because I've opened up in so many different areas of spirituality with so many different gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And what seems to be the reoccurring pattern for me is that I constantly seem to have a problem with stepping into my power.
Exactly.
And, you know, I haven't quite figured that one out yet. I think that's actually a lesson for me that I'm working through. But it's really interesting to kind of know exactly what you're saying there.
Well, you're talking about, I think, our basic human condition. And our condition of being here in a body, to be separate, thinking we're separate, therefore, from the universe, from what we call God, from each other. in this illusion of separateness. And I say illusion because even Einstein put it that way. He says it's just an optical illusion that we're separate. But from a spiritual perspective and from a quantum physics perspective, we can never be separate. We're all part of one unified field. Or from a spiritual perspective, we're all part of the deity we call God, the God mind. And we can never be separate from it. But our little ego minds that uses the body as a symbol of separateness keeps us anchored to our feelings of littleness and separateness and powerlessness. And we get attached to this false identity. Whereas a true spiritual awakening is recognizing, as I was mentioning in that creation myth in the book of Genesis, we're all created in the image and likeness of God, which means we're also all-powerful. But we're really frightened of the power as much as we seek it. But we disown it. It's like wonderful quote that everybody's quoted from Marianne Williamson 20 years ago, that the thing we fear most is our greatness.
It's amazing. Thank you for that. We're going to just take a quick break. I just want to let everybody know you're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio, as always, on this third Tuesday of every month from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We do what's called the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour, as we call it, a show about men and their spiritual journeys. This evening, of course, I have my co-host Mike on. And and if you want to find out more about us, our websites, and the work that we do, you can find all the links, including the links for our guest this evening, Dr. Henry Grayson. All the links and everything for that are up on the website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Because the show runs once a month, you'll actually have to scroll down the page to the monthly section to see our special information on this show and also another show that we do once a month, which is with Brigida and Mike, where they do channeling. So with that, let's go ahead and go back. Let me check in with Mike real quick before I ask you another question, Henry. Mike, do you have any follow-up questions before we move into the next area?
Yes, I do. One thing I found fascinating about our conversation so far is when we talked about the different techniques that you can use in the moment when you're feeling a certain kind of emotion to say that I love myself and I care for myself.
What even, it kind of makes even me, though I'm feeling, yes.
Yes, and what it makes me think about is, just how important it is really to live in be in the present moment. And what can really happen is our minds can take us into the past, or we're actually living in the past, we're in the present moment, because let's say we walk into a room and right away, we see some people, maybe what they're wearing or how they look, and because we had issues with somebody like that in the past, right away we're right into fear. Oh, that person across the room is going to call me this or give me a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
We walk up to that person and they're the nicest person in the world.
Yeah.
But, it's almost as though what happens is our traumas don't let us live in the present moment. We can be in a present moment and be totally in a place of safety and happiness, but we won't allow ourselves to be there because my past experiences, or maybe just one particular past experiences, is what our mind is letting us say, this is what's going to dictate my experience now, or this is why I'm afraid to even go or do this because this is what happened before. But when we really can embrace being in the present moment, and say, okay, I'm in this moment regardless of my past issues. I want to be in total happiness tonight. I want to be in enjoyment. I want to be in love and compassion. And I just find that so amazing because, how often do we get nervous about things that, oh, man, I was a failure at this last time and it's going to happen again. And then we go through the experience and be like, wow, that was amazing. Nobody gave me a hard time. I got nothing but compliments, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, we take the past and then project it into the future.
And exactly.
Think it's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That destroys our good feelings here and now.
So the next thing I wanted to ask you, because, we definitely don't want to come out of the show. We could go on with this for hours and hours because of how incredible it is. Can you kind of tell us, as this is a show about men and their journeys, how did you come to your spiritual way of living?
Well, I think it was a circuitous journey. I grew up in a very religious family. Ended up after college going to theology school without ever remembering applying. Within a semester, I became an atheist. and still remained in theology school, but was questioning the whole time I was there at Emory University. And because I could not accept those premises of this kind of an external sky god, separate and removed from us, who was judging or punishing or rewarding, and all the different aspects that grew out of that. And so I was constantly questioning. The amazing thing is, I got rewarded for questioning. I never expected that would happen. I did more questioning than anybody I knew in the whole school. And then at the end of the graduation time, the faculty elected me as outstanding senior of the year. And I thought, that's encouragement for me to keep questioning. And so by that time, I decided I wanted to go into psychology. And that's when I left to go to Boston University to go to graduate school. And so I put aside the idea of becoming a minister. But I'm glad I had that background, because I learned a lot about philosophy and different systems of thought and where they originated and who thought them and all that sort of thing. But then I was just very much of an agnostic for many, many years. But I still had some deeper sense inside of something of a higher purpose or something with a greater meaning. And then it was back in the early 80s. I'd gotten interested in quantum physics and started to read some of that. And I was invited to attend a small workshop of about 40 people with physicist David Bohm, who wrote the book Wholeness and the Implicate Order and other books from the University of London. And that was a transformative experience in my life. I'll never forget it. It turned my whole life around. Because what he helped us see from a quantum physics perspective, nothing is really separate. Everything is part of one whole. Holiness does not mean something holy, holy, holy up there somewhere. Holy means we are part of it, one whole, all together. And we cannot be separate from the all that is. I began to see the whole world differently. I thought it was a whole other world, literally, I was seeing, and I realized that it was so, because the world I was seeing before was one of world of separateness. And then the world of oneness I began to see, and I began to retranslate a lot of the spiritual teachings to see them within that context. Then I saw it much more in the Eastern traditions. But I saw it in the Western, but it just was there, but it had been distorted through much of the teachings. All of that helped me to reach more of a spiritual place. And it was shortly after that I began to practice regular meditation. And then I would be like many people. I was very active and always been active and doing a lot of interest in many different things. And so I'd have a deadline for something, and I'd say, oh, I don't have time to meditate today. I better go get this done first. Then a little voice in my head would come in with a quote attributed to Jesus of Nazareth in the Christian Bible, when he said, seek first the kingdom of heaven, and everything else will be added to you. But he made very clear that heaven wasn't somewhere. He says, don't go seeking for heaven out there somewhere. It was the Catholic Church that came along and made it a geographical place you got to after you died. And if you were rewarded, if you do what the church told you to do, and you're punished and go to hell, a geographical place afterward. No, he made it clear that heaven and hell are here right now and inside me this very moment. And so when I remind myself of the phrase, seek first the kingdom of heaven, everything else will be added to you. I remember the studies about meditation that had been done with business executives. And those who would meditate would get more done at a higher level in less time than those who didn't. And I thought, and I'll be more at peace too if I meditate. I'll be past the stress. So I'd go sit and meditate, and I'd find the same thing. I couldn't believe how easily I would get things done that I was so anxious about getting completed. The whole shift occurred. And that was a major part of my spiritual journey right there, to realize just that kind of shift in the present and my way of looking at things, my way of trusting, my way of practicing, quieting down this egoic mind, would help me reconnect with my true nature, my divine nature inside, who and what I truly am. And that's the only place I could really feel empowered, the only place I can really feel at peace.
Wow. So, one of the things we were looking at is we wanted to talk about, how has this influenced you as a man and in the work that you've done? And I know you kind of touched on some of this already.
Well, I certainly would say it has to have totally influenced my work. I mean, I started out when I was in Atlanta, Georgia, I had opportunities presented to me in real estate and insurance there, that where I could have been multimillionaire several times over by the time I was age 30. And then I began to realize, as I considered that seriously before I went into psychology, and because it was a real temptation, and I saw the ways clearly that I could do it, and I had the doors open for me to do it. And then I thought, God, I'd be so bored. Just doing this stuff all day long is not really touching anybody's heart. It's not touching their lives. It's not fulfilling. Now, yes, I'd be making a lot of money, but it would not be fulfilling to me at the deepest core of my being. I wanted to do something where I could touch people's lives, their hearts, their souls, their spirits, their relationships, their health, their happiness, their joy. I wanted to be involved in that way more directly. And so I think that's the major way it's affected my life. Is that, and I just feel so grateful to be in the profession I am and feel so thankful for it, because I can just spend a half hour with one person here, an hour with somebody there, and I get into being of help there. My own little troubles have just gone far into the background. I'm just totally present, being that healing force. But that healing force is not me. It's really one that comes through me. You know, it's not my little ego self that's doing it. It's my divine nature that does that. And it just provides more opportunities for me to feel that connection.
Do you have any questions at this point, Mike? I want to make sure you're...
So, Henry, I'd like to ask you, what advice can you give... can you give our listeners out there of steps that they can use to try to clear their mind when they're faced with situations, you know, when you come home from a long work day and your mind is just kind of jumbled and full of what everything has gone on and in ego and everything else. And so what kind of advice can you give our viewers to help them shift their minds so that maybe – not only maybe, like, let's say you meditate a little bit at the end of the day, but to go out through your regular day to not let it get so maybe negative so that you're not picking up so much from everybody else. Tools you can use throughout the day just to try to keep yourself a little more centered and a little more in love and compassion instead of picking up negativity from everybody else. The way I describe it sometimes is, you know, when we get into somebody else's auric field. You know, everybody has their arc field and the energy that they put out. You know, sometimes when we're off guard, we just get caught up in that energy-wise, and we can pick it up. Just like the story you said about the experiment with you and your wife, you know, you can get in somebody's energy field and just feel that downturn right away and not even give it a second thought and just be just as negative as them.
Exactly.
So what kind of tools can you give us that are just quick and handy things that we can just kind of keep in our own little toolbox in the back of our mind?
Well, I think there's several. One is that thymus heart rub we used before. I think a second thing is most of us don't breathe much. Americans are typically oxygen deprived. The old saying, I was so busy, I didn't have time to breathe, is literally true for most people. Most people in our pressured, pushing ourselves to do so much, find ourselves breathing shallowly and quickly, which starves our brains, makes us feel more powerless, dumbs us down, makes us sick more, and so that whole chain reaction gets going, and it keeps us from being as centered, because we can't think as clearly, intelligently, or creatively. So one thing we need to do throughout the day is to continually check in and see, how's my breathing going? Am I exhaling fully to make room for lungs full of oxygen? Most people, when they take deep breaths, do it in a way that doesn't work. The lungs are three-quarters full of carbon dioxide, and they try to take a deep breath. There's no room for oxygen. We need to exhale, empty our lungs fully and completely, and do that periodically throughout the day. Exhale fully, and then take a slow, full, deep breath, first of all into the belly, then up into the chest. If we do that from time to time during the day, we're going to be much more centered more of the time. We'll be more creative, more intelligent in our problem solving. And then I think the other part is that if I can do that and then use the ending of it to remind myself, my goal is to be my higher self here, my loving nature, because that's the most powerful part of my being. It's not the mamby-pamby part of me, as often people think of love as being. No, it's a part that makes your muscles strongest. It's a part that makes every organ and system in the body strongest. And if I can get that clear, which is contrary to what we're taught about true power and masculinity is in our country, it's just the opposite of what guys are typically taught. The real power lies in that identification with that. For example, I mentioned before how if a person thinks the compassionate thought, the arm goes strong. If they think the negative thought, it goes weak. When you talk about how we're affected by other people's power, yes, if somebody around us is thinking negative things, but I'm not conscious of what I'm thinking, I'm going to absorb that negative energy. But the minute I move toward having a compassionate thought or a loving thought, instantly, I'm no longer, if we did the muscle testing at that point, my arm is strong no matter how much negative thought the other person around me is putting out. And what happens if you keep them there together, slowly you'll find that gradually the person in that negative energy has more and more trouble staying in it. And the other person remains strong and not affected by the negative. So it's a very simple way that we can take care of ourselves around the negative energy. Some people, for example, I've worked with sometimes people who are body workers who do massages and things like that. They'll say when somebody comes in with negative energy, oh, God, I have to clean out my office. I have to clear it out and wash my hands. I'm carrying all that negative with me. All they're doing is making themselves feel like a victim. No, that's not the approach. All they need to do is just shift their thinking toward that person with negative energy and have compassion for them that their negative energy will heal, whatever it is. Instantly, they've protected themselves.
So I think this is a very interesting question. I want to make sure we cover before we go. And you basically said one of the things I wanted to ask you is, why do you believe that the general population of men, the majority of men, aren't ready to embrace spirituality the way women are?
I think a lot of it is because of the way we've indoctrinated men to be. And I think it's increased more over the last 15 or 20 years since we have the media. And the media portrays men in so many movies, newscasts, and particularly in professional sports, portrays them in such a way that they're supposed to be tough and non-feeling. Often they'll speak like robots, you know, bland, without any feeling, intonation in their voices. You're supposed to be not affected by things emotionally. You're supposed to keep the stiff upper lip. We've let that affect our culture, and it's very dramatic. I see a real difference even between men in our culture and even in our neighboring country, Canada. When I travel there doing seminars and I observe men in the airports or in restaurants or the bar sitting next to the restaurant, I see a very different scene and different attitude amongst the men in that country versus in ours. They're much more camaraderie. They're not loud and boisterous trying to be tough. They can be normal conversation, connecting, you know, more genuinely affectionate with one another, more open with their emotions. We've really got a long ways to do to change our idea about what's really tough and what's not. Like, there's a son of one of my friends that lives up in Connecticut. When her son was about 12, playing soccer in the fall, and it was a very cold autumn day last year when he was playing, and he'd been out running on the field, and he came back in and sat down. Somebody else went in to play, and he put on a sweatshirt to sit down on the bench. The coach came over to him and said, "Do you want to be a sissy? No, take off that sweatshirt. Don't be a sissy." As if that's a sign of masculinity, to be there and freeze. Total distortion. Fortunately, one of the other fathers came along about 5 minutes later and saw him shivering and said, "Yeah, why don't you put on your sweatshirt and be warm?" And countered it. Fortunately, he had a different message coming to him. But I think that is so typical of what we're trying to train our boys and men to be. And it takes us away from dealing with the feelings of love, because we equate love with littleness and powerlessness and vulnerability. And we don't really see the real reality of love, that it's the most powerful force. And all the others that we think are powerful just make us live out of fear more, and our fear more just permeates everything. So consequently, all of our newscasts are 95% fear activated. So much of our sports is a competition. You can't lose or you're less than. you can't show your vulnerable feelings, therefore men die 10 years younger than women because they can't cry. You know, all of this is going on. I've been thinking I should write a book on men's liberation, because I think we're in bondage as much as women ever were, but in a different way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with that, you know, it leads into a really good question, and that is, how do men balance their masculine energy without ego?
Well, the whole idea is, how do we do anything without ego? Because it's our egos that take us away from our true selves, whether it's a masculine or feminine energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not my true self. It's my false self. In fact, even our country is thriving on that. When you think about our national budget, I just discovered recently, it blew my mind. You know, almost every budget item in our country is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5%, with education, health care, whatever it is, highways, so on. 60% goes to military. Everything else is about 5% or less. Wow, we are a nation filled with fear. Just living off of fear, and it's driving us insane and sick. Our country, our health system is falling apart. We think we have the greatest one, but it's probably 28th in terms of longevity, or even infant survival rate, and so on. We're way down in this, and because we're fostering fear at every angle. And fear is the opposite of love. And that's where the spiritual force that needs to come back in for our healing, to take back our power, and our health, and our joy, and our happiness, and our contentment. That comes from the spiritual awakening, you know, of knowing we are love itself.
So what do you think is the biggest lesson you've learned in life so far on your own journey?
That's a tough one, because I've learned so many lessons. But one occurs to me that's been really powerful, and that's one of the paradoxes as well, too, is the practice of surrender. And what I mean by that, it's not the surrender of anything important. It's the surrender of my ego. My little ego that thinks it can mastermind and figure out solutions to kind of difficult problems. And when I can realize I'm part of the all that is, I'm part of the intelligent force of the universe, I'm not separate from it. But if I can surrender my little ego self, and say, I don't understand how to solve this problem with this person or with this situation. I'm open to guidance. I'm ready to receive guidance. I trust that it will come to me. If there's a word to be said or an action to be taken, it'll be shown me. And that the outcome will be for the highest good. I find when I can surrender my ego that way, I'm amazed at how things turn out differently, how much more at peace I am, and how the problems get solved.
Well, I think one of the interesting things that you mentioned is something that I've been working on. I hate the word struggle. I'm not going to use that. And that is trust. Trusting that the guidance is going to come there. Trusting that the guy, you know, whatever I'm getting as far as whatever I'm doing is the correct decisions, that I am back, that I can depend on the fact that, you know, I am going to get the support I need when I surrender.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if you have any hints as far as, you know, men who are going through that growth. You know, how do you find that? Do you just basically sit back and surrender and just allow the validation to happen, or?
Well, I think most of us, to get to that place, have to come to a place where we realize, I can't figure it out. A place where I say, there has to be a better way. There has to be some other answer. I've tried everything I know, and my trust in my own strength and that separate self, little self, and it just has not worked. That's where the place most of us have to come before we're willing to let go and surrender. And then by doing so, we're realizing the ego mind doesn't have the real answers, and I can't get it there. It's only made me feel bad. It's only made the situation worse. Then maybe I'm open to a higher guidance, and I can surrender. And I know it took that to get me to start that practice. And I'll never forget the one scene that turned it around maybe 25 years ago. But it's my first attempt. And then I can remind myself of that other time since. Oh, this is what I did then. And it really worked. I felt better. I came up with an answer. I came up with a peaceful one. It gave me a solution I wouldn't have thought of. And so then that inspires me to do it again. And with each success at that, it inspires me to do it again and again.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
I was just saying that one psychospiritual work I quoted before called A Course in Miracles says that human beings have an amazing capacity for huge amounts of suffering and pain. And we'll tolerate much suffering and pain until we reach a place of saying, it's just too much. There's got to be a better way. And that's the point, I think, when we turn around and willing to surrender, willing to go into this other way of existence, and to realize my old way didn't work.
So we're going ahead and getting ready to wrap up the show. It's just unbelievable, you know, how fast an hour goes. It's kind of a general quote I have almost trademarked at this point. with that, though, why don't you go ahead and give out your website?
It's just henrygrayson.com. That's spelled G-R-A-Y-S-O-N. henrygrayson.com is my website, yes.
And why don't you just share with everybody what exactly is it that you're working on right now? Where can we see you? Are you teaching? Where are you teaching? Is there a new book coming out?
Well, my recent book was Use Your Body to Heal Your Mind, which means we just use the language of the body to get into touch with what creates the symptoms. And so I'm going around teaching seminars around the country and other countries largely based on that. I'm also working on another book, The Truth About Depression, which means that you don't use a drug to try to correct a chemical imbalance in the brain, but it doesn't get to what caused the chemical imbalance in the first place. It doesn't get to the source. And so there are a lot of other methods by clearing traumas, by changing our belief system, changing our thought structure, by practicing this kind of surrender, where we change that brain chemistry. We get to the real cause that way. So that's another thing I'm working on. I may be doing a pilot study in a correctional institution in Massachusetts as well, where the drug and alcohol addicts that are also criminals. And they talk about drug addiction and alcohol addiction as being a way trying to self-medicate. And that's not really attended to in hardly any of the drug rehab programs. And so that's one thing I want to do and show that can make a difference, that if we attend to clearing out traumas, help people deal with their vulnerability and their pain, have tools they can use for that, that it can make a difference and reduce the recidivism rate. So I'm hoping that's going to really show that result as well. I truly believe that it will, but I'm eager to have it concrete.
Mm. Well, that's amazing. As always, thanks again for coming on. If for anybody who's listening to the show, if you missed any part of this, it'll be available for replay. I did see a note come up from Blog Talk Radio that the processing of the replays is actually delayed a couple hours. It's normally available probably about 10 minutes after the show is over, but there's going to be a delay today. But probably by tomorrow, if you missed any part of the show, you'll be able to go back and listen to it. As always, Henry, it's great to have you on. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you've been busy traveling, and it's a great honor to have you on. And, Mike, it's always great to have you on the show also.
Oh, yeah, it was a pleasure to meet you, Henry. Thank you very much.
Thank you both. It's really good being with you again here and to talk with you about these things. As you say, we could go on for hours. But time doesn't allow that, this thing that doesn't exist that we call time.
Yeah, exactly, right? All right, so...
thank you again.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you both. So for anybody who's been listening, you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. If you want to find out more about this show or other shows or to find the replays for any of the shows, you can go to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. So I want to send lots of love and energy out to everybody out there, and have a great night. And tune in next month to hear the next show and our next guest. And I guess that's it. Good night, everybody.